speaking today with State Representative Christy Thiebaugh, who represents District 133 out in Western Harris County. Representative, that you were in your first term in office, was it what you thought it would be?
Oh, yeah. It was what I thought it was going to be and a lot more. I think the thing that probably differentiated this session from other sessions was that the civility came back this time around and allowed us to work on our own personal issues that we could get through, which I think were a lot tougher in the past with having a speaker like Tom Craddock. But having Joe Strauss, things were made a lot easier. We were all able to work together a little bit more. I think from the difference from being a staff to being the actual legislator is incredibly different experience. It's much more intense, I think. So it was everything and more that I thought it would be.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Speaker Strauss, as you say. There was a new speaker in the House this year after three sessions of Tom Craddock. Now, you didn't serve under Craddock, but you had previously run while he was still speaker. I guess I can't quite say yet, can you contrast the experience? But what is your perception of how things were compared to how they used to be?
Well, look, there's a huge difference. Not to note that Democrats didn't get everything we wanted. It's never going to be that way when you have a Republican speaker. But I think the process was able to work better because we had a different speaker who just said, okay, let's let the process run. And when I say that, he gave as many chairmanships, gave several chairmanships, important committees to Democrats. There were actually some committees that were controlled by Democrats. I actually served on a committee that was controlled by Democrats and one that was controlled by Republicans, a chair from each party, and I just found the working relationship to be a lot more cordial. And you're not going to always agree on those core particular issues that come up, but it will allow you to work on personal issues that are important in your district. Some things like and a bill that made a big difference to people in my neighborhood was we called it the Rivercrest Bill. And that bill basically had to do with making sure that if there is going to be some type of a road closure in your community, that the local governing board, which is city council in Houston, has to actually vote on it, and that if you're affected by that area, I believe it's within a half a mile, you have to be notified and you get an opportunity to speak about it. You think that, that's why I'm saying sometimes these local issues in a neighborhood are the most important thing, and it's the maddest thing that they're about. It's amazing to find out some of the issues that you pass that you never thought would be so important. And knocking on doors in my neighborhood, you talk to people and they're still mad about that. And that particular issue, and if you do something about it, people will look at you in a different way, and maybe in a more open way. So,
were you satisfied with the committee assignments you got last session, and what do you hope to get if you are reelected for this session?
Well, I would say they were not my first choice, but I would say...
I mean, you were on one committee
I was on culture, rec, and tourism. And I was on land and resource management. And I truly believe that the speaker put me on land and on culture, rec, and tourism because I actually had worked for Parks and Wildlife at one time, and all the parks go under that particular committee. But I tell you what, I mean, as a freshman in the minority party, you get your committee assignments and you learn from them. And I think one of the things that I did with one of my committees being culture, rec, and tourism, you listen to a lot of bills, but what you make out of that are your relationships. And some very senior people were sitting on that particular committee, and I made friends of them. And I showed up to work every day. I didn't miss a committee meeting. I was a good committee member. And I think when you do that, even a committee that's not your first choice, and you do the work, then people respect you.
Okay. Obviously, the big issue going into this session will be the budget. There's a shortfall. The number that is incited by Appropriations Chair Jim Pitts is $18 billion. What approach should the legislature be taking to deal with this in 2011?
Well, I can tell you what the approach that they are taking, whether it be the approach that I would take or not, isn't even the issue. Because right now, as long as we have the governor, the House Speaker being the same, and and the lieutenant governor, it's not going to change. So we're giving a task, and that task basically is to cut the budget, don't raise any taxes, and each agency was given the unfortunate burden of having to come up with 10% budget cuts going into the next biennium. So it's a very challenging session. I know that the Chairman Pitts has said that he has 100 votes to use half of the rainy day fund. We'll see. That takes a two-thirds vote, so got to have 100 votes. It'll be challenging.
Do you favor using the rainy day fund?
I actually favor using half of the rainy day fund and then taking another look at it, because I don't think you can completely deplete it, especially with the uncertainty going in the future. Well, you could come back in 2 years and use a little bit more, but I definitely think we should use at least half of it, and I definitely favor that. There have been other talks, and actually I watched to see what people are proposing. They're proposing an increase in the gas tax, tax on bottled water. Expanding the franchise tax, I saw that. Also closing loopholes. I saw that Chairman Oliveira had proposed some cuts that would close about, he found a $1.5 billion. Seems small, but you got that's kind of the approach that you got to take. So casino gambling, of course, is up. Gambling in general, whether it be just the slot machines at the racetracks, which they're terming racinos, or full-out casino gambling, it's all on the table. They had an interim committee meeting about it. So you'll see that come and see what kind of will that there is. But I actually think you're going to find a bill that gets out of committee. And really, the only thing that particular bill will do will allow voters to vote on whether they want to see, it's a constitutional amendment, whether they want to see gambling in the state of Texas expanded or not. And I favor it. I know that might be your
next question. You anticipated my next question. I've been asking that of a lot of people.
I did, and I have no problem saying it. There is a casino bus that actually is in my district that leaves my district full. And all those people get on, and they go to Louisiana. I'm not saying that. I hate to see all that money going to every single state around us and having them have the benefits of that. If our people are going to gamble, let's have it in the state, and let's tax it, and let's get it. That's the way I look at it, especially in these hard economic times and the things that we're going to have to continue to keep doing. So why not? It's on the table.
Okay. Right now, there's been a lot of talk about education-related issues. Obviously, education, public education, and higher education are a big part of the budget. You know, are you concerned about how much cuts are going to come out of that and how much can come out of that? I mean, are we funding public education in this state the way we should be, and what are your concerns going into this session about what's going to happen with it?
Well, I never think you think that you have enough money for public ed. Even last year with the stimulus dollars, I think all they got basically was a cost of living increase. It was, what, 3% increase? But we did more than almost any other state did. I think school districts already mandate so much that they must accomplish and then don't fund it. It's a challenge. It's going to be a continuing challenge on what survives and what doesn't, what gets cut. I think that the teachers are already talking about working conditions. They're concerned about the quality of time that they have with their kids, but also having a lot of other tasks put upon them. As some people have already been asked to drive school buses in addition to teaching all day. Having to clean your own classrooms, toilets in your own place. I think people are going to be asked to do, and you think that's, I mean, it sounds funny, but I've met with the teachers' unions, and they're concerned about deteriorating work conditions, and that was actually mentioned to me. And I just think they're very concerned with additional duties. And then we thrust more things upon things that they're required to do. And with no more pay, hopefully no cuts in pay, but no more additional costs. So it's very challenging. And if you could watch, we went and if you could see the superintendent from Cypress Fairbanks, I believe it was, give his speech on, you know, this next session, they understand how tough it's going to be, and they'll be okay for this next session. But going forward, that particular school district is going to be in the red before you know it. and they're going to be operating under huge deficits, and I don't know how they're going to maintain that. So yes, it's definitely an incredible question going forward, but this year, covering what we have to cover in education and healthcare are going to be the main focus. And until we really get going, nobody really wants to talk about cuts. We keep asking to see what's out there, to see the proposals, and I have yet to get anything out. So I think coming closer to the election, it's going to be until after, probably November 3rd, everything will be very transparent on what's going to be cut. So it's all about who gets elected, too. It's all about who gets to set the tone. And I'm a true believer in if we could just take those three more seats, Democrats could at least, we could definitely have a bigger say in how those dollars were spent. So.
Well, of course, I mean, I think you're correct in your assessment that, you know, whatever your or my preferred approach would be, that approach is going to be dictated by, you know, the governor and the speaker, you know, maybe, you know, more likely than not a Republican, but... As you know, in 2006, in response to a Supreme Court ruling about the state about the property tax property tax levels, the legislature has cut property taxes by a third, and there was supposed to be money made up for that from the franchise tax and the cigarette taxes and whatnot, but it's fallen short by several billion dollars every year. What does the legislature need to do about that?
Well, it's hard when a system was set up to fail to fix it, and especially in this challenging time, it's even made that more difficult. I'll be honest with you, it's going to be challenging because nobody can even give you the solution. I mean, we talked about all the different things that we're going to do just to cover the $18 billion shortfall, and I named several of the additional revenues that we could get. I'm sure that people are really talking about other additional revenue fees. You don't have to call it a tax. It's, you know, it still could be considered a tax. We'll see. I mean, it's very hard to say what's really going to happen until we see exactly what the shortfall is, exactly what's in the rainy day fund. I'll be honest with you. We'll be tweaking with that this session, but no major fix on education will come out of this session with the particulars that are facing us. The massive shortfalls that we already have, redistricting, we have a battle on immigration. I mean, there are going to be some things that are going to be really taking a lot of the time. So the education system isn't in how we fund it. I guarantee you we'll only be tweaked with minor ways. We're not going to solve that particular issue this session. There's no will for it.
In recent weeks, the U.S. Congress passed and President Obama signed a bill that was designed to provide more money to state governments to prevent layoffs and whatnot. Some $800 million of that is earmarked for Texas for education, but of course there was, as you know, there was a condition put on that the money actually be allocated to education. There's been some saber rattling on the part of Governor Perry and Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst that was unconstitutional. They're going to challenge it. So far, I haven't seen any action. I've only seen words. Are you concerned about this, or do you believe that money will actually be used as Congress intended?
Well, I think it has to be used as Congress intended. I think they put some strict stipulations on that particular money just for our state, because last time we used education dollars to balance the budget. Saber rattling doesn't really concern me right now in words and things like that. It's really what happens. But, you know, at the end of the day, come on, let's face it. Anytime we give people money, school districts, whatever, they come with strings attached. We tell you how you have to use your money. That's in every aspect of life. So it shouldn't be unusual. It's just, you know, trying to scare people and scare tactics. Not really. I just kind of roll my eyes at things along the lines of the federal government is intruding in states' rights. They've been intruding in states' rights as long as I can remember, and nobody's, until this particular election cycle or the last election cycle, has been really concerned about it. So, I just kind of ignore that. We'll see. Because, you know, we have the hard work to do. I don't have time to listen to all of that. We'll see at the end of the day what the federal government actually does. But I don't think that we can change it. We can talk, scream, holler. But if they put a little stipulation on it, we're going to either turn the money away or we'll use the money the way it was intended. That's the way I see it right now.
All right. You've mentioned a couple of hot-button issues that are likely to surface in this session, particular immigration. A couple of your colleagues, Representative Riddle, Representative Berman, are going to file a bill that would give Texas a similar law that Arizona passed in terms of enforcing immigration laws. What is your take on this?
I think it'll be a tough battle in the state. Even the governor has said that the Arizona law, Governor Perry has said that the Arizona law doesn't fit our state. I think if we're really, ever, truly concerned with immigration, legal immigration, then we have to really hold our employers, we have to hold them responsible. Because if there weren't any jobs, people wouldn't come here. They're coming here to make a better way of life. Parts of Mexico are extremely dangerous right now, so people are fleeing in droves to come somewhere where they can make a better life for their family. I want a better life for my family than the life that I had. I had a great life, but you always want more for your own family. I can't judge somebody on the basis of that, but if we're really, really serious about changes in immigration, it has to start with enforcing it with employers. And also, I will say that there are some safety concerns along the border. I saw recently a Texas Monthly article that said that some of the border counties were the safest in the country, and I think that's quickly changing. And I'm actually really concerned about it as well, especially in El Paso. Well, and we were talking about immigration, and I wanted to make clear the difference between immigration and border security. We do actually have a problem in this state with border security, and really especially in the El Paso area. We've recently had an incident where they closed down a road along the border because the drug cartels have still been warring, and I think they were still warring this morning, and some stray guns, stray bullets were found at UTEP. And so I think that this is only going to continue to escalate, and it does make sense that we will have some spillover at some point. So we do have to prepare ourselves for that. And if we're really, truly worried about border security, then we're going to have to put more boots on the ground, better technologies. We're going to have to be very vigilant about gang violence with our drug cartels. Also, I have seen that there has been a pickup in actual, inspections going into Mexico, where people now, they've been doing this, but they're picking up and doing more of it. They're looking for people that are actually going into Mexico with large sums of money, guns, and they're trying to stop the influx of guns and even things such as flak jackets and things that they found that are going over to these cartels. So it has to go both ways. We need more inspectors. I know that is definitely a point where we need to put more people on the lines along the border to do more inspections. So it's that all costs money. And I know that President Obama recently signed some more border security into law, and we're going to get some more people and some more funds. How much is enough? I mean, it's hard to say. So that's my border security. We just have to really pay attention, especially in our hot spots like El Paso.
And 2011 will be a redistricting session. Any concerns about that? How do you want to see it go?
Oh, well, you know, of course I want all the seats to be drawn democratically. But I really am not paying attention to redistricting right now. Matter of fact, I really just need to get through my next election. And it's interesting because after the election, they're actually going to do a redistricting committee hearing in Houston for the greater Houston area. So I don't even really need to worry about it until then. I'm focused on winning my re-election, and that's pretty much where I'm putting most of my efforts right now.
All right. Well, talk about that. You are now running for a third consecutive election against the same opponent.
Right.
He won one, then you won one, and this is the rubber match.
That's right.
Does that change things, running against someone you've run against before?
As you learn a little bit more about them, I think once you've run against them three times. I think he's probably a smarter candidate this time around. He's working extremely hard, smart. But our campaign probably is unmatched in its focus and its hard work and raising money. And I would say that we probably have a better operation. But it's definitely, I don't take anything for granted. I always run like I'm behind. And this is a particular district that's trending Democratic. It is a 50-50, a true 50-50, could go either way. But there's some very positive things that are going on in this county that make me very hopeful that we can win re-election. And that's the fact that, number one, we have Bill White on the ticket. And he, what he does for me is he makes people aware that there's an election. He puts money into television commercials. He gets the awareness out there, and he breaks that straight party voting, which I need. Also, Gordon Kwan is on the ticket. Helps me with the Asian community. Same reason. My Asian community is 16% demographically of my district. They make up, maybe about 9-10% of my vote. So that's an important factor, having Bill, a very popular former mayor, on the ticket. The other thing is we have a very well-funded, coordinated campaign that's out there working. There are extra organizations that are out, that have been out working in my district. We've done some voter registration. The great news is, in all the Republican precincts, voter registration is down. In all the Democratic precincts, voter registration is up. There's more of us out there. It's really the challenge is getting people back to the polls. And that's about motivating your base.
Well, and again, I've been asking everybody.
That's why the voter enthusiasm gap. Exactly. Because if this was just a true numbers game, I would win because there are more Democrats in my district than there are Republicans. But the true fact is that we have got to get our base motivated. They don't vote in numbers like they usually vote in presidential years. So getting them excited about what's on the ticket is incredibly important.
And what are you doing about that?
Oh, wow. I mean, we've knocked on over 13,000 doors. We're constantly doing something in the community, whether it be a back-to-school drive in Ailey where we served over 800 kids. Each one of them walked out with a backpack, school supplies, and a voucher for a free uniform. We're doing a job fair mid-September. We're doing a veterans benefit. My district hasn't stopped since the day. My district office has not stopped since the day I was elected. We always do things in the district to help people because I think that community service and community, getting the community, letting them know about the things that are out there to help them is very important. So we've been working really hard, and I hope it pays off in November so people will want me to come back and work just as hard as I have this time around. But this is my third job fair. And this isn't just for the election. This is my third job fair that I'll be doing within less than 2 years. And that's because people want to work. It's great that we're a point behind the national average in unemployment, but still 8.2% is too high. Thank goodness Texas is one of the few states where there is job growth and continued job growth. Our job fair will probably have over 30 employers. So, and it's out in the Alief area because people in Alief, not everybody has transportation. We have a large apartment community. It's an indefinite issue. So we like to hold things that are out in the community. It's very hard for them to come in. So we focus our efforts in that area. But, you know, we do a lot of things from teaching people how to start a college fund because we're in session only every other year. So I tend to focus on the things that help people out there that may already be out there and just want them to be aware of. So we'll see.
And just sort of to sum it up, why should people vote to send you back to Austin this year?
Because I think I've proven in the short amount of time that I've been there, all of the things that I've done to better their lives, and even if they're small ways, giving their kids school supplies to go back to work, putting shelters on bus stops, making sure any eligible bus stop that we have got a shelter. Little things, informing them of how to do the power to choose, how to, you know, choose your electricity, but also going up there and fighting for those particular issues that we came this close, Charles, we came that close to getting foreclosure reform, home foreclosure reform. We're going to go back and fight that battle again. I fought to try and lower the utility rates. I did things that affect their lives in small ways, and trying to save their money and making their dollars go forward. I tried to get lower college tuition. I think these are the particular issues. I'm one of them. I'm a mom. I'm a parent who has the same issues that they do. My electricity rates are too high. I've got to be able to send my kid to college. I mean, we all share these same things, and I want them to know that I'm out there. I've worked hard. I've made myself available, and this is my full-time job. This is what I do. I wake up every morning thinking, literally, what can I do today to help my community? And I think when you have somebody that works that hard for you, you want to send them back.
All right. Representative Christy Thibault, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.